97.9 The Hill, WCHL, and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus, dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, UNC Journalism Professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the history of the Super Bowl. Our guest, Matt Andrews, who teaches sports history at UNC. Matt, Super Bowl 53, lowest scoring game ever, lowest TV ratings in 10 years. Personal opinion here, a snooze fest for those of us who sat through the whole thing. I sent out a note on social media at halftime, someone please wake me up when the game begins.
Right.
But the next day, article comes out and says Super Bowl 53 is not the worst Super Bowl of all time, even though some of us might consider it the boringest. The worst Super Bowl of all time, according to this publication, Seahawks 43, Broncos 8. I think the reason that was considered not to be a very good Super Bowl was because it was such a blowout.
Sure.
And so opposite of what was expected in terms of final score.
Sure. Well, and then I think a couple of the 49ers Super Bowls in the 80s and 90s, the 49ers beat the Broncos 55-10 in one Super Bowl. I'm from San Francisco, so I enjoyed every minute of that Super Bowl.
Yeah, but beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
I think it is. At least this was a close game. There was a sense that the Rams could do something. This Super Bowl, though, you're absolutely right. It was a snooze fest. I tweeted out at halftime, you know, and they say baseball is boring. There was just absolutely nothing going on in this game. If you're a fan of the punt, that game was sublime.
The announcers, in fact, were joking with one another at one point, saying, should we consider the punters for MVP?
Which I appreciated, because it was a good point. There were some fantastic punts in that game. That's about all we can say about it.
So what seems to be on this list, and we've talked about lists before,
sure,
how even lists are in the eyes of the beholder.
Yes.
Was it competitive? Seems to be a really important point to this list. And what was the star power involved in the game? If it was, you know, two teams, say from Kansas City and
sure,
Atlanta or
right,
whatever,
right,
you know, no real superstars on the team. The game's not competitive. The folks who compiled this list would say that wasn't a very good Super Bowl.
Right. And so what we had here, we had two teams from two big markets, right? We had the Boston, New England market and the Los Angeles market, although how big a market Los Angeles is for football, I think the NFL is still trying to figure out. You know, I thought we had the added interest is that these were the two same cities that went head-to-head in the World Series. We had the Red Sox and the Dodgers that just faced each other a couple of months ago. We have those great Lakers-Celtics rivalries of the 1980s. I'm not sure this game fed off of those tensions, but, you know, if you're talking star power, we've got the greatest quarterback in the history of the game. And again, I'm a 49er guy. I'm a Joe Montana guy. But Tom Brady, 6 Super Bowl wins now. 9 Super Bowls. He seems to have cemented his position as the all-time best, as has Belichick as coach.
You know, whether you're a Brady fan or a Belichick fan or not, and I am not.
Neither am I.
For either one,
right,
you have to admire that franchise.
I've been resisting for as long as I can, and especially doing it in the salary cap era where you just can't pay all your best players and keep them. What they have done is absolutely remarkable. And sometimes I wonder, is it a function of how great they are, or is it an indictment of just how inept everyone else is? Maybe it doesn't matter.
So two different lists. We've already talked about what are some of the worst, some of the best, different publication.
Right.
4 of the 5, quote, air quote, best Super Bowls ever involved the Patriots,
well, they seem,
according to this list.
Yeah, and they seem to give us a close game every single time. This was the biggest blowout that the Patriots have ever been
part
of. And it was just a 10-point win, and it was sort of in doubt until about 5 minutes left. Boy, when you want to talk great games, I don't think you have to go back much further than last year, Super Bowl 52.
The Eagles,
the Patriots and the Eagles. That game had a little bit of everything. We had quarterbacks catching touchdown passes. We had quarterbacks dropping wide-open passes. For, sheer drama. If I just think about the game itself as a sports fan, I'm not sure I enjoyed a Super Bowl more than I enjoyed Super Bowl 52.
And then you have 51, the first one to go into overtime.
Yeah, and although to me, I guess if I'm looking back at it, I would say maybe the most exciting game that the Patriots were in, it was a relatively low-scoring game. It was Super Bowl 42, so New York Giants 17, New England 14. And what made that game so exceptional is that the Patriots had went in with an undefeated record. They were 18-0. Brady was at the peak of his powers. They had a tremendous defense. Randy Moss was catching for that team. They just seemed unbeatable. And as the game went on, the pressure built. You thought the Giants actually might be able to do it. It took a miracle. I don't know if you remember the David Tyree catch where he pinned the ball against his helmet, even though Rodney Harrison was beating him savagely as he went to the ground. Somehow he held onto the ball. That's his last catch in his NFL career, actually. That was a remarkable, very tense-filled game.
So, upsets tend to wind up on the list of greatest Super Bowls.
Okay. Well, when you think upsets in the Super Bowl, that was one of them, the one that I just mentioned. The Patriots were big favorites. The ultimate upset in Super Bowl history is the Super Bowl that I think may be the most important Super Bowl, Super Bowl III, with Joe Namath and the underdog AFL going up against the established NFL, and not just the established NFL, but one of the more established popular teams, the Baltimore Colts. They had the great John Unitas, although he barely played in that game. You know, that was the game that no one thought that the AFL and the Jets had a chance. And when they beat the Colts and beat them soundly, that's the game that really gave legitimacy to the AFL and helped bring along the merger, the AFL-NFL merger, where now we just have the NFL.
Sports Focus, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about the history of the Super Bowl with Matt Andrews, who teaches sports history at UNC. So, Matt, we were talking about Super Bowl III. That's not on this other list of best games.
Sure.
And again, it's what are you looking for to define best game?
Yeah.
You had the brash, and now maybe he wasn't a superstar then, but he sure is now, Joe Namath in that game.
He became a superstar in that game. And though I think in some ways he's an overrated quarterback if you look at his numbers, I'm not sure there's been a quarterback that was a bigger cultural icon in professional football than Joe Namath. Joe Namath confounded a lot of ideas. He brought attention to himself. And he did something that professional athletes rarely did. Back in 1969, he guaranteed a victory against the heavily favorite Colts. Now, that's something that Muhammad Ali was doing at the same time, brashly predicting victory. But for sort of a straight-laced, conservative football player, which is the way a lot of people thought of football players at that time, this was a pretty remarkable moment in the history of American sports. You know, so if you ask me as a sports fan, what are my favorite Super Bowls, that's a different answer than to what, as a sport historian, I think are the most significant Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm. So Joe, maybe at the time, was a bit conservative. He later was not conservative at all. Very, very crazy kind of guy.
Right.
If he had made that prediction and they had lost, would we even remember it?
We would probably remember him as one of the great GOATs. Yeah, so we would remember it in a negative way.
You know? And GOAT in the negative connotation.
That's right, I forgot. Yeah, now more and more GOAT is the positive thing. Yeah, I think one of the, if you're going to brashly predict victory, if you're going to talk about yourself as the greatest of all time, like Ali did, you got to back it up. Joe Namath backed it up. He wasn't the star of that game. It was their defense that was the star of the game. But it's interesting going back. People who were following professional football just did not give the AFL any credibility. It was absolutely thought as the weaker league. And the fact that the AFL could so soundly defeat an NFL team really opened up people's minds. It was shocking. And again, when it was all done in the shadow of that boast, that's what made Joe Namath Broadway Joe.
Yeah, only a couple of touchdowns scored in that game.
Right, 16-7.
Yeah. So it wasn't really no more score, very little more scoring than we saw in 53.
Right, yeah. But again, it's the times. So, you know, the AFL is the brainchild of this Kansas City Chiefs owner, Lamar Hunt, mm-hmm. who wanted to get into the NFL, but the NFL owners didn't want to let this young 28-year-old oil man into the league. So he creates his own league, and the AFL and the NFL are going head-to-head for much of the 60s, and finally they come to this agreement that, all right, we're both legitimate leagues. Why don't we match the champions? And so the first Super Bowl is not called the Super Bowl. It's just called the AFL-NFL Championship. That's the same for the second one. The first game that's officially called the Super Bowl is Super Bowl III. It's a great story. Lamar Hunt jokingly called it the Super Bowl. And if you think about it, it's actually a pretty stupid name, mm-hmm. the Super Bowl. But he saw his children playing with a Super Ball, and he thought, oh, maybe we should call this the Super Bowl. He jokingly said that, didn't think it was going to catch, but the press ran with it. And then it becomes the Super Bowl. And again, this is the game that solidified the legitimacy of the AFL. And you want to talk about what a phenomenon it was. More people watched Namath and the Jets beat the Colts in January of 1969 than watched Neil Armstrong walk on the moon 7 months later.
Wow. Let's go back to our list.
Sure.
According to, again, a national publication, and they're looking at competitiveness and star power.
Okay.
All right. The number one Super Bowl of all time, according to this group, 46, which is New England, 28, Seattle, 24.
You know, I barely remember anything about that game. I got to be honest.
Yeah.
And it's probably because all of these Patriots games are just a blur now. I mean, they've been in it 9 in the last 17 years.
Well, they are in 4 of the top 5 rated Super Bowls, according to this metric.
Sure. Well, and now that I think about it, I do remember exactly what happened. This is when Russell Wilson, when the Seahawks inexplicably threw the ball when they were on the 1 yard line. Everyone thought that it was going to go to Marshawn Lynch. I was with a bunch of Seahawks fans, and they were chanting beast mode. That's clearly the play, and Pete Carroll outsmarted himself in this particular moment. That was a stunning moment, and that was an excellent and very closely fought game.
So it's, again, based on that metric, it makes sense that that would be number one or very close to number one.
I think so. Sure.
All right, so other games that maybe we need to think about.
The game that stands out is Super Bowl 25, which is New York Giants 20, Buffalo 19. I think what makes this Super Bowl so important is that this was the game that was going on right when the United States was beginning Operation Desert Storm. You know, this game was going on at the very minute that the United States military was bombing Baghdad to sort of soften that country up for a land invasion. And if you remember that Super Bowl, the whole thing in some ways became this pageant for American militarism and for this adventure abroad. Whitney Houston sang a rousing rendition of the national anthem that went number one on the pop charts right after that. Such was the patriotic mood of the country. You had these thundering flyovers, the types of bombers flying over the stadium in Tampa Bay that at that very moment were dropping bombs on Baghdad. And then even the halftime show. Instead, ABC went directly to the White House, and George H.W. Bush gave a speech to the Super Bowl public, actually called the invasion of Iraq his Super Bowl. Ever since then, there had always been close links between sports and militarism and patriotism in American society, but they were forever cemented with Super Bowl 25.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion with Matt Andrews about the history of the Super Bowl. So, Matt, you have two lists of your own.
Right.
Each one of us who's ever, you know, who follows the Super Bowl probably has our own. Here's my number one.
Sure.
22. Super Bowl 22. Historically significant to me.
Yeah.
First black quarterback to play in the Super Bowl, and he just trashes.
Yeah.
the opposition.
And maybe it's hard if you haven't been around for a while, as we have, but you think back to all of the sort of damaging ideas that were out there about black athletes and sort of their intellectual capabilities. Black men can't be quarterbacks. They can't be pitchers. We had prominent people like Jimmy the Greek and Al Campanis, you know, mm-hmm. in 1987, saying that black men lack some of the necessities to be major league managers. Why are there
intellectually speaking?
Intellectually, yeah. And then he got into the realm of weird science. Why are there no good black swimmers? It's because black people lack buoyancy. I mean, there were weird, crazy ideas out there. And one of them was just that a black quarterback can never win the big game because they'll buckle under pressure. And thankfully, Doug Williams, you know, just smashed all of those ideas. Though they do linger. You know, someone said this about Deshaun Watson this year and got in a little bit of heat. He was a member of a Department of Education in Texas, and he accidentally publicly tweeted, you know, something along the lines, see, you can't trust a black quarterback. It's that same tired idea that should have gone away when Doug Williams won that game. So I agree with you from a social perspective of social history. That is an immensely important game.
John Elway, superstar.
Right.
Doug Williams didn't even start the season.
That's right.
Came from Tampa Bay, right. And all good players at Tampa Bay wound up somewhere else right. during the years that I was covering them.
Yeah.
Right. 35 points in one quarter.
That's right. That's right.
One quarter.
Yeah, yeah. Doug Williams. This was an era, you think back to the 80s and the early 90s, where there was a pattern. The NFC just walked all over the AFC. You know, whether it was the Redskins, the 49ers, the Giants, and then, of course, the Bears, sort of very famously in 1985. Those games were not competitive at all, but it's a story like that that makes that game immensely meaningful. So I would agree with you. That one needs to be on the list, not just of great games, but of significant games.
I don't know if this is myth or it's reality, but the story is that it wasn't at the Super Bowl. It was at a different game in the locker room. Doug Williams is asked, Doug, how long have you been a black quarterback?
That's
and,
right.
And his and his answer was, since I left Grambling.
Since interesting.
Which I thought was, if it's true, that's fascinating, you know, that he would come up with that answer.
It's a silly question. It's a brilliant answer to a silly question, right? When you're at Grambling, all the players are black. You go into the NFL, suddenly it's a thing. And again, it still is to an extent. You know, this Super Bowl, if you think about just all the power positions, well, the quarterbacks were both white, the coaches were both white, the owners of the teams are white, the announcers are white, the commissioner of the NFL is white. All of this is happening in Atlanta when, you know, not to get terribly political here, but this is all happening in Atlanta while the NFL has all these feel-good moments with Roger Goodell and the descendants of Dr. King and sort of arguing that the NFL is the league that cares about civil rights. Maybe they are, but at the same time, they're also a league that has clearly blackballed a quarterback for taking a knee during the national anthem to protest racism.
So we have about a minute left.
Sure.
How does the NFL get past that? That's not one of the main areas of focus.
Right. Well, I think they have to an extent. You know, the numbers went back up this year because there was no kneeling. Mm-hmm. And the way they got through it was by severely punishing the people who were doing it, you know, particularly Colin Kaepernick. They let Eric Reed back into the league, who was kneeling alongside Kaepernick. You know, it's interesting. If you think about all of the problems facing the NFL, the concussion issue, the fact that fewer and fewer people are playing football. You know, we live in Chapel Hill, and they have a hard time fielding football teams in the local high schools.
Teams,
yeah, there's talk of combining the three high schools into one team so they have enough players. None of those things. Football is in trouble. The NFL just keeps making money. They keep making money. The only thing that's got in the way of the NFL in the last couple of years is a young black man taking a knee and protesting racism. But I think they have firmly dealt with that issue.
And I will add one other thing that they have to deal with is really boring Super Bowls.
Yeah, that's right.
That does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Matt Andrews. Thanks also to engineer John Turner. And thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.